Welcome, everybody, to Parsha Vayetze, 5771, on our topic of the basics of Torah reality. So we've had a number of classes so far on this series. I'm going to do a short recap, but I have to tell you that we're getting into it, and we're at the point where today I think that we're going to learn about something that will kind of test if we're really on the program. Okay, I'm very serious. We're talking about very, very serious things. We're talking about the basic definition of Torah reality. And as I have told you before, it doesn't mean, just because it says basics, it doesn't mean it's easy. It may be very foreign to us. Maybe foreign, but it's basics because it is the core ideas and the core ideals of Torah. I didn't, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, I didn't know if we had to go any further, but every week I find there's more. So today there's more. To do a quick recap, and by the way, I have found experiencing within myself that I get a little passionate sometimes. I hope that you feel it in a good way, and it's not something that makes you uncomfortable. But because these are basics, because when things like this, important things, crystallize, sometimes it can make you more passionate than if you're just talking about peripheral things. And that's why it happens. Okay? And thank you, because if not for you, I wouldn't be exploring these ideas. So, to be very brief, in our recap of what we've learned so far, Dr. Jezuri can experience with us what we have been learning. We've come to the point where we understand that we, man, and more specifically, Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, we carry with us the identity of Tzelem Elokim, of being in the image of God, and it is really up to us, in this current situation of the world, this world as we know it, Olam Hazeh, this world, it is really up to us to reveal God in the world. We do this, as we've mentioned, in primarily two ways. It's kind of a two-pronged attack. Part of that means that we have to put ourselves in a self-effacing position where we nullify our mind, our thoughts, to the thoughts of God in terms of accepting the reality of His teaching and His Torah and His commandments. There's a certain amount of self-effacement, and there's also a certain amount of greatness, of getting up and developing ourselves and using all of our kochos, using all of our abilities to portray the midos, the godly midos which we have. That's part of our Tzelem Elokim, character traits. There is the idea of taking responsibility, of being builders, of being creators. There is the passive, and then there's the active aspect of Tzelem Elokim. That's when we kind of thought that we had said it all. But then we realized that it's easy to kind of say that, but it's not so easy to live that. And last week we suggested the fact that the greatest struggle and the greatest, quote, source of evil is that we don't see ourselves as that. We just see ourselves as little people. Kind of like Esav said, I'm just hungry for some lentil soup. Why do I need to be the Bechor and to be a spiritual patriarch and all that? Let me just satiate my desire, my appetite, and move on in life and just kind of be a small person. So our big struggle in all of this is being all that we are supposed to be. Well, that's not so easily accomplished either. It's not just a matter of a pep talk. Come on, guys, we're at Tzelem Elokim. Let's realize who we are and go get it. Because even if we accept, even if we don't balk at the idea, even if we actually accept it up here, try to wake up in the morning and do it. And it's still a Herculean feat. And it's still Mount Everest. And if we don't feel that it's Mount Everest inside, let's just try walking outside onto the street and see all the rest of humanity not being that. And saying, come on, be a small person like me. Let's go eat lentil soup together. And then try to be that big person that Tzelem Elokim. It's almost, you know, just close the shutters and go back to bed. So, it's hard. So from a basic point of view, why is it so hard? And how in the world are we supposed to accomplish the things that we are put here to accomplish? If the task from within and from without is so monumental. So, again, I think that we have to unroll the basics a little more to incorporate a point, which it may be the breaking point for some. It may separate the men from the boys and from the ladies from the girls. So, to this group, I would say, it's really not anything that we haven't discussed before, but we're going to revisit it. And it's the experience of repeating it again and crystallizing it again that can help us absorb it. So that's my hope and my prayer, that as we discuss these ideas, we grasp it a little bit better, we crystallize it a little clearer, and we absorb it a little more. So I want to open up this discussion by quoting several examples. And the first one is from the Parsha. Yaakov Avinu was told at the end of Parshas Toldos by his parents, you've got to run. For one, he was running for his life because Esav wanted to kill him. For another, he was 60 years old and it was about time for him to settle down. He had to get married. He wasn't 60 years old. He was 63 years old. Yes, he was 63 years old when he had to run. Based on some calculations of the dates and the years, taking his total life span and working backwards, Rashi, at the end of Parshas Toldos, calculates that he did not go where he was supposed to go when he left. He left his parents in Israel at age 63, and he did not arrive to Haran, Lavan's house where he was sent, until he was 77. Now that's a pretty big detour. He did not go right away. Where was he? He remained in the land of Israel, and Rashi says, and I'm not going to go through the calculations because that's way too complicated even for me to understand. Mikan, lamadnu mikan, shenitman bebeis ever yudalet shana v'achar kach halach l'charan. We learn from these calculations that he hid himself in the Beis Aver, in the house of Aver, which is understood by the commentaries to mean it was like a yeshiva. It was a place where they studied Torah and spirituality. They studied Torah. Okay, whatever form the Torah was in those days, it was a yeshiva like we have yeshivas, a place of Torah study. And he spent 14 years there, and then he went to Haran. Yeah, Mom, Dad, I'll get there. I just got to make a stop. 14 years. And at the beginning of the parsha, when we have the dream, this is once again reinforced, wherein it says, the very second verse, "Vayifka b'makom v'yolen sham kivo hashemesh," he encountered the place and spent the night there. And Rashi says every word is significant. He spent the night there.
Where'd you get 14 years?
What?
Where'd you get 14 years?
I didn't go through the calculation. Yes.
Is that possibly connected? Wasn't it? He couldn't be with Raphael for 7 years, and then Levon hit him again with another 7 years.
By the time he married Rachel, he was 84. No.
I'm talking about 14 years might constitute two terms of 7 years that he did not have access to.
Yeah. No.
No.
He didn't get there till he was 77. He worked for 7 years for Rachel. He's now 84. He married Leah. Then he married Rachel. And then he worked another 7 years. By the time he returned... This is, again, the calculations Rashi does. It was 70, he was 77 before he even went.
He got there at 77.
Yeah.
He
spent 14 years before leaving Israel and going to Haran. He took a 14-year detour. Why? He was studying Torah. And not only was he studying Torah, but he was studying Torah so intensely that Rashi makes the comment, and I can't find it at the moment, that this was the first time, here we go, Vayishkav makom hahu, and he lay down in that place. Rashi says, Ba'oso makom shachav. That's the place that he lied down. Aval yodalet shanim, but the 14 years, Shishimesh bebeis Aver, that he was studying in Aver, lo shachav balayla, he wasn't resting at night. Maybe he was laying, put his head down on the table, Shaya osek batorah, because he was so involved in the study of Torah. Not only was he at the yeshiva for 14 years, but he was studying intensely night and day for 14 years. And the question is, why? He's 63 years old. He's running for his life. That's my first example. I haven't told you where I'm going with all this, but that's just an example from our parsha. Yaakov Avinu decides before he can go to Lavan, he's got to study Torah in the yeshiva day and night for 14 years, at age 63 till age 77. Another example. Today, 2010, 5771, all over the world, there are young men studying in yeshivas. And some of them study in the yeshiva for 14 years or more. And some of them also sleep very little. Why?
Why
do they do that?
Why not?
Another example. Your kollel rabbis. We left the yeshiva. We didn't study 14 years. Most of us. I studied for 2 years in Baltimore, then 2 years in Israel. Then I got married, and I studied for 5 more years, and then I moved to Atlanta. Why did I move to Atlanta? To teach, to reach out. And so do all of my colleagues. But we also study Torah every day for several hours. Why do we study Torah so much? That's another example. Why do we teach Torah so much? Why do we insist on giving classes? Why don't we just have social events? If we want to reach out to Jews, why do we have to teach all the time? Why do we have to give lectures and study the Parsha and study all of it and the Chumash and the Rashi? Why don't we just reach out and just be friendly and we hope we are friendly, but we're so, if you ask a rabbi, what is your method? Teaching Torah. Why? Why is that how we do outreach? Another example. When Rabbi Akiva lived in the time of the Romans, and the Romans came out with a decree and said that anybody who is found teaching Torah in public will be executed, Rabbi Akiva, who was probably around the same age as Yaakov Avinu, he insisted on teaching Torah in public. And he knew he was going to get caught, and he got caught, and he was massacred in a very cruel way. And so were his other colleagues, the 10 martyrs. Why did they risk their life for Torah study? You're not required to give up your life for Torah study. You're required to give your life up rather than commit the three cardinal sins. Final example. Every Shabbos, when we take out the Torah, we sing. Is it in the Torah when we take it out? It's in the Ki Hem Chayenu Va'orech Yamenu Uvohem Nehege Yomam Valaila, because they are our life and the length of our days, and in it we will meditate day and night, referring to Torah study. It is our life. What does that mean, it is our life? The Torah study is our life. It's something that we do. We do a lot of things. We do a lot of mitzvahs. Why is Torah our life? And why do we have to meditate it day and night? Isn't that a little bit fanatical? These are the questions that I have. And they all are illustrations of a similar point. An emphasis on studying Torah. So the answer is that even though we are the spiritual giants that we claim to be, that indeed a human being and now a Jew is a Tzelem Elokim, is wired and primed to reveal the oneness of God in the world and to act with godly midos. Even though that's true, it's not natural. That's not how we behave at rest. That's not something that comes naturally to us or that is easy for us. It's not. As a matter of fact, what's natural for us is to be anything but spiritual. Let's review the different components of man that we started off on our very first class, Bereishis and Noach. Man is comprised of a body, an emotional structure, an intellect, and a godly soul. Four levels within man, within the Jew. I say the Jew because through the evolution of society, of mankind, the other nations seem to have lost control, lost the use of their godly soul. Today, it is the descendants of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that still have access to that godly soul, which is why we have so much responsibility for the revelation of God's oneness. So that's why I say a Jew. We were all created, all of man was created with Tzelem Elokim, but it seems that through the evolution of society, only the Jew still has access and control over it. But even that, that's not a natural thing. We, by nature, are much more driven by our body, by our emotional structure, and by our human intellect. To the point that the godly soul, for the most part, we're not even aware that we have it. Yes, us great revealers of the divine oneness are totally unaware of our ability to do that. I can cite a very favorite source of mine, which I've read to you before, Rabbi Luzzatto in The Path of the Just, in his introduction. For piety, fear of the eternal, love of the eternal, purity of heart, those are all the spiritual good things, are not that deeply rooted within a person, not to necessitate the employment of methods for their acquisition. In this respect, they differ from natural states such as sleep and wakefulness, hunger and satiety, and all other natural instincts. Those come easy to us. We don't have to learn how to be tired. We don't have to learn how to be hungry. We don't have to learn how to be cranky. We just are naturally. So how does one acquire spiritual qualities? It requires methods and devices. Furthermore, while there are many factors operating to distance piety from man, there are many elements that can counter these factors. Okay, we'll get to that. There is a way to acquire them, but they're not natural. And if we don't try to acquire them, we won't. We absolutely won't. If a Jew will remain at rest and just allow himself to be natural, he most definitely will not acquire spiritual traits. He will develop in the natural instincts. His physical drives will still be there. His emotional drives will still be there. His intellect will continue to develop as human intellect. And he will not cross over to the realm of the spiritual unless he makes an effort to acquire them. That is a given. If we have neither contemplated nor studied what true fear of heaven is or what its ramifications are, how will we acquire it? How will we escape from the vanity of the world that renders our hearts forgetful? Surely it will fade away and be forgotten, even though we recognize its necessity. If we do not make an effort to anchor love of the eternal within our hearts, with the power of all those means that lead toward it, how will it exist within us? How will devotion and ardor for the Blessed One and His Torah enter into our souls if we do not direct ourselves towards His greatness and exaltedness, thereby internalizing it within our hearts? How will our thoughts be purified if we do not try to cleanse them from the blemishes infused in them by physical nature? Much the same can also be said about all the character traits which need improvement and adjustment. Who will adjust them and who will correct them with all the necessary rigor, if not us? So, my dear friends, this is the point at which we have to ask ourselves, where do we stand on the basics? And I'm not asking for a commitment. I'm asking for acknowledging, affirming a reality. This is basics of Torah reality. And you might say, well, I never heard this stuff. I was just taught that if you're Jewish, you just go to shul, and you keep Shabbos, and finished. Or whatever it is that you do. I was never told that there's some kind of reality here. And what we are taught by our Torah is that there's a reality here. The reality is that the spiritual side of man is dormant, inactive, inert, and that the physical and the emotional and the intellectual powers of man are natural, and that's what drives us if we are just left at rest. That is the thing that we have to decide. If we want to say, I don't want to go there, then, my friends, I say that we are letting go of Torah basics. Now, I'll continue so you can hear more about it. But this is what we are called to do today. And again, even if we will say, not I am much more spiritual than that, naturally, even if I'll grant you that, we still have to acknowledge that when we walk out of our doors every single morning, we are thrown into a world which most definitely does not share that. And we are in contact with people that don't even pretend to be spiritual. We are in contact with people that will state openly, there is no spiritual. It is all about physical and emotional and intellectual, and that's all there is. And they will advertise to us, and we will see those advertisements, and we will be sucked into that. I'm really not saying anything deep. I'm saying just simple basics. It's just that we may not have considered this before. Or we may not realize how many times we've heard this, but how important it really is. So, to get a little more specific, we are naturally inclined to unspiritual emotions, such as jealousy. Jealousy is a natural instinct that a man has. More, I don't know who it's stronger in men or in women, but it is a natural instinct where we look at other people who have things that we would like and we don't like them because of that. That's a natural instinct. We have a natural desire and appetite for physical pleasure. That is a natural state. That's called ta'ava, physical desire. In our minds, we are naturally drawn to think of ourselves as smart, to think of ourselves as honorable and deserving of credit for the intellect that we possess. We think of our intellect as superior. We think we understand things. We think that we can disagree with anybody and everybody because we know best. That is a natural instinct. I have it. You have it. We all have it. This is our natural state. And as the sages say, kina, tava, and kavo, these three drives, that jealousy, physical desire, and imagination of honor that we have of ourselves. Motzi'in es ha'adam min ha'olam. Take us out of the real world. Take us out of the real world. Kina, jealousy. Take us out of the real world. And here we are trying to reveal the oneness of God. And we have to be able to have the right things clear in our minds. We have to have the truth. And we have to be able to embrace our fellow man and have Avas Yisrael and love of every Jew. And we are supposed to stand before God in self-effacing prayer every day and say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Achad. And yet we're filled with all of this. How could we possibly turn this into that? So there is an answer. But this answer requires that you buy into it. You have to accept. Because according to Torah, there's only one answer. There's only one answer. And if you accept it, you've got it. If you don't accept it, you don't got it. And the answer is all of the examples that I shared with you. The answer is study the Torah. And that is the only antidote for our natural inclinations. This is explicated by Rabbi Luzzatto very, very clearly. That's why I say we've talked about this before. The rationale behind this is that the Creator, blessed be His name, who created the evil inclination within man, which is the manifestation of our body and our emotions and our intellect. He created it. So He should know. He knows the recipe. And He also created the Torah as an antidote. As our sages of blessed memory have said, I have created the evil inclination, and I have created the Torah as its antidote. Thus it is obvious that if the Creator created this antidote solely for this disease, it is not possible under any circumstances for a person to be healed without this cure. He who expects to be saved without this is mistaken, and he will perceive his mistake in the end. For the evil inclination is truly powerful within man, and without man's awareness it becomes progressively more powerful than him until eventually it rules over him, even if a person tries every manner of cure in the world, if he doesn't apply the antidote that was created for this, namely the Torah, as I have written, he will only recognize and feel the worsening of his sickness when he dies of his sins and his soul perishes. It's basic. It is basic. That's why Yaakov Avinu said, I'm going to go to live with Lavan. Lavan, the whitewasher, the man who lives for falsehood, who lives for corruption, who lives for illusion, who does it is not his word is not his word is worth less than the cheapest commodity around. I'm going to live with him. I'm going to become family with him. And what's going to happen to my soul? I've got to fortify myself with Torah study. 1, 2, 5, 10, 14 years, day and night. Maybe then I will become unscathed by this scoundrel. Yaakov Avinu is worried about his soul after all that he's accomplished in his life, at the age that he is. He is worried. What does that say about us? And how does it work? Is it rational? Is it rational that if we study Torah, then all of a sudden we're going to become this humble, kind, merciful, non-arrogant person? Is it really compute? Because let's say I study Tractate Bava Kamma, and I learn about oxen goring cows and how much you have to pay. Do you pay full damages or half damages? Does it really make me into a different kind of a person? Yes and no. Yes, it does. And it's kind of magic. Rabbi David Feinstein said, I once read this years ago, and it made such an impression on me. The Torah is compared to the red heifer. Zos chukas haTorah, this is the statute of the Torah. The para aduma, the red heifer, if you burn it and take the ashes and mix it into a potion and sprinkle it on the person that has the defilement of the dead, he will become pure. Is that rational?
No.
No, but it works. The answer is that the para aduma is a metaphor for the Torah itself. Water mixed with the ashes of a totally red cow has the power to cleanse someone from the form of tumah caused by contact with a dead person. This is supra-rational. We will never be able to understand how or why it works. So also, the Torah has the power to cleanse its followers from many types of impurity. And if one pursues it diligently and with proper intentions, it will transform him into a pure and sincere person. Just as we do not and cannot understand the workings of para aduma, we do not understand how Torah study and observance has this purifying effect on individuals. But it does work. But I say yes and no. It only works if we have proper intentions, like Rabbi Feinstein said. And Rabbi Twersky elaborates on this, the proper intentions. Torah contains a magic charm, as it were, that can successfully counteract the Yetzer Hara. All Yetzer Hara. The body, the emotions, the intellect. There's one distinction, however, between the analogy he had raise an analogy of taking vitamin C for scurvy. That's like Torah is for the Yetzer Hara, what vitamin C is for scurvy. But he says there's one distinction, however. That is, whereas vitamin C will cure scurvy regardless of how and why it is taken, as long as it goes down, Torah must be studied with the intent that it should lead to character refinement. As we have noted, the Yetzer Hara is very wily and may distort even Torah teachings for its purpose. So will it work? Depends. But it's the only known cure. And you've got to take the cure with the right intentions. And then it'll work. Then it'll work. it will work for our, it will weaken our, if we fill our minds with the wisdom of Torah, not the wisdom of Socrates, not the wisdom of Shakespeare, not the wisdom of Beethoven, if we fill our minds with the wisdom of Hashem, it will weaken our physical drives. It will make us lethargic. I mean, I think it will animate us, but it will take away our physical impulses. It will soften them. If we study Torah with the right intentions, it will work on our emotions. It might make us less angry. It might make us more pleasant. It might make us less arrogant. It will make us realize that we really don't know as much as we thought, and therefore when we talk to other people, we won't be so haughty about it. And it will certainly straighten out our intellect after it turns it into a pretzel. But rather than our illusion that we know everything, it will certainly straighten that out. Again, if we want to take that medicine, if we buy into this, if we buy into this reality, but this is, there, I don't think there's any other opinions about this. Everything that I've told you is basic. I have not gotten into anything having to do with lifestyle, how a person should dress, how many hours a day a person should learn. We're not going into all those things, but we are talking about the constant that a Jew without Torah, ki heim chayenu, it is our life. That's what we mean. And we will try to support and to encourage our young men and our young women to study Torah intensely for a period of time if they are able, because they will become strong and they will be able to fortify the communities that they live in. And hopefully they will become dedicated to Torah study as a life goal, which is what our teachers taught us to do. But they said, you cannot go out and teach people if you're not constantly learning Torah yourself. The minute you stop learning Torah, you stop breathing. You stop seeing things clearly. You stop curbing those impulses and those emotions. Torah is a lie. It's literally our air. It's basic. The reason why this is the breaking point is because two things. Number one, we have to acknowledge the disease. And number two, we have to acknowledge the cure. See, I don't know how many people want to acknowledge this disease. I don't know even nice Jews that want to do all the Jewish things. I don't know if they want to acknowledge this reality, this Torah reality. Remember, this is not a class on the basics of mitzvahs. This is a class on the basics of Torah reality. I promise you that what I'm saying is basic, but it's basic to a certain acceptance of the real reality of the Torah. So we have it could be a breaking point. And then once we acknowledge the reality that we are creatures of bodily impulses and emotional impulses and intellectual illusion, we have to accept that about ourselves and not be broken by that, by the way, because the cure, it may be a little bitter tasting at first, but after you take it for a while, it's delicious. It's delicious. You'll like what it does to you. You already do, because you keep coming back. But that's what we're talking about. That's what Torah is. It's not just to get information. It's not to be knowledgeable. It's not to be able to be a rabbi. It's to be able to live in the Torah reality. Thank you.
Can we ask questions?
Please. Any other way.
Well, you said that Hashem created the evil inclination, and then you said physical. So Judaism has a different view of physical. We don't have the same view that you're born into sin like the non-Jews have. We have a view of physical as something being beautiful and being and you elevate it. So how is that the evil inclination?
You're talking about what we do, what we can do with it. You're not talking about the natural instincts.
I am talking about some of
the natural instincts by themselves will make not spiritual things out of us.
By themselves, but under
right.
The Torah
exactly.
Way of living.
So that's something that we have to add to it.
But we raise up the physical.
Exactly.
So it's
but if when we're born, we don't have any of that. We have just potential. Mm-hmm. We have strong instincts that if we just let that child grow up and don't teach him Torah and don't discipline him in the ways of Torah and the ways of Midos, he is going to become a lot of body, a lot of emotion, and a lot of intellect, and not soul. And then those impulses are not going to be, as you say, beautiful. They have to be channeled, and that's where the challenge is. I don't know if we are like the Christians or not like the Christians. The Christians got everything from the Torah anyway. Is there an original sin? Yes, there's an original sin, Adam and Eve, right? When we're born, are we sinful? Potentially, yes.
No.
Yes.
I was told no. I was told, not that, please forgive me, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I was told we are born exactly what you said before. We are born like, we don't have, like a clear slate.
No, not true. Not true. We're born with a Yetzer Hara.
Yeah,
and when does the Yetzer Tov kick in?
13
at 13, if we direct it. If we don't, the Yetzer Hara will just continue naturally without any prodding needed. We believe that we're born with the Yetzer Hara. So I don't know if you call it sin, but we are born with the Yetzer Hara, and we don't have a Yetzer Tov unless we develop it. You don't have to develop the Yetzer Hara. It's automatically there.
But you don't have to go until you're 13 to develop it.
The weakness to fall prey to. What I have heard that the non-Jews believe is that they procreate, the child is born, and that's a sin because they did that. And that child is born as a sin.
What's a sin?
That they had a child? That they had a
yes.
child, yeah.
Okay.
Their relationship. Well, we don't believe that at all. We believe that's an elevate.
Yeah. I mean... I agree with that. That's not a sin to procreate.
Why they believe that a person is born into sin. We don't believe
that's
that
why?
All.
Because they had procreation?
Yeah.
Because the mother and the father had relations? That. That's a sin?
Have you heard that before?
Okay. Anyways, what you're talking about, actions versus instincts are two totally different things. Actions may not be sinful, but we are created with Yetzer Hara.
Which is not a bad thing.
And that's how God made it. But he put us into a world and he said, if you don't work hard to develop the Yetzer Tov, you will just be driven by the Yetzer Hara.
I'm not positive about it.
Yes.
But I believe, since in the chronology as the Torah is written, you have the sin of the apple or the fruit happening before Cain and Hevel show up, that they see it as cause and effect. You eat from the tree, you have these carnal desires which are evil, and then this is the result of it, these children. And that was the original sin. And that's the way they see it. And they see man's carnality as central to this whole sexual thing. That's one of the reasons why
the priests,
higher up people are celibate.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason that their God had to be born not through a
sexual. Uh-huh. Otherwise it would have been sinful.
Yeah, that's the whole
so that is not, that is hogwash.
Oh, yeah, right. We know that.
That's hogwash. It's a mitzvah. It was the first mitzvah of the Torah of God to Adam and Eve to procreate and have a child. So that's hogwash. But the instinct that man has is one of the manifestations of the Yetzer Hara, which can, if channeled by the Torah, can become the greatest, not only the greatest mitzvah, but if you recall, one of the ways in which we are like God and in the ways that we reveal the oneness of God is by creation. Right? So here you have it, perhaps the greatest force of Yetzer Hara being channeled by Torah into the greatest force of godliness. But the point here is that the Yetzer Hara will happen willy-nilly. The Yetzer HaTov has to be activated. And if it's not, and the greatest activating method is through learning the Torah.
Well, what you had said, it's like growing a bush. You know, you don't trim the brush, it'll just grow wide. But we do say a little prayer in the morning that says, "Dear
save
God,
me from the Yetzer Hara.
The body you gave me was pure." Isn't that right?
Yeah.
No, the neshama, the soul you gave me is pure. The soul.
God says something like, somewhere he says that people are I'm going to have to destroy everybody because the tendency is toward evil.
Yeah.
Where is that?
In the Noah.
So,
at the end of Reshit, before the flood.
Right. So there's both, you know, and but you still, in other words, you got this urge and you got to trim it. But the thing is, the Christian belief of what the original sin is and what the Jews believe is the original sin are not the same.
Uh-huh.
They're not the same.
Our sin is the eating of the tree. Theirs is the
disobedience, eating of the tree, blaming your wife, blaming God.
And what is theirs?
But carnality is not a
sin. I didn't realize that was the sin.
What's that?
I didn't know that.
Well,
what?
That the sin was the carnality?
Carnality.
I didn't know that. I thought it was the tree.
Eating, yes, but what is that? But then all of a sudden you recognize that you're naked and you want clothes, et cetera, et cetera. And then they start having sex.
The commandment was not to eat from the tree. That's what they violated.
Yes.
Having children was the commandment. So it's hogwash.
They ate from the tree. I thought they had
they actually did, but the commandment didn't come until later.
Wait a minute. No, they didn't.
They had the children.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Not in the chronology of the Chumash. They didn't, but if according to the oral tradition, they had the
because the next
they had the tree. I know.
And Adam knew.
You can't use the Parsha of Bereishis as a chronology.
Yeah, that's what the Kohal de Hanukkah is. We celebrate the oral Torah.
Yeah.
We celebrate. We can't have the Torah without the oral Torah.
And of course, the next question is, what is? Here's the problem. What is Torah? When you say study Torah,
what is
Torah?
Very good. That's a good question. And we are going to develop that a lot more in the book of Shmos.
Surely Yaakov was not studying that which Moses got from Mount Sinai.
Right, right.
What did he study then?
But it was the same stuff.
Yeah, it was the same.
The patriarchs, because of their greatness, their great spiritual stature, they were able to bring down the wisdom without having to go up to the mountain.
And one other little item, and that is the whole essence of what we're learning is morality, ethics, social conduct. That's the message. Morality, ethics, social conduct, and that's the duty of the Jew to present that to the world.
Right.
Morality, ethics, social conduct, and you have to conduct yourself in a way that shows morality, ethics.
But only as it's defined by the Torah. If it's man-made morality, it will keep the Noahites in line. It will not keep the Jews in line. If the Jews try to be moral without Torah, it won't work. Once we were given the Torah, you see, we have a greater soul. That means we also have a greater Yetzer Hara. It says that the greater the spiritual stature, also the greater the evil inclination.
That's why it says the tzaddik falls seven times.
Right.
He gets up seven times.
We need the Torah to counteract ours.
But I wanted to ask you, there is a place for Beethoven, and that, you know, there is a place to fill yourself with the wisdom of the world also.
Okay, so I didn't get to this, but Rabbi Volba, in his basics, speaks about, this is Pathways, I quoted this several times before, he's the one that said I have to study, read the book, The Way Back. To incorporate. Okay. So here's the thing. I wanted to do this. I saw that the class was already filled up, and I stopped. But he has a chapter devoted to how does the Jew live in the world. Okay. And this is already. Maybe we'll talk about this next week because it's basic. In other words, today we spoke about the theory of it. How do we do it? A hostile world, corruption, materialism, perversion, brutality. How can the Torah Jew find his place? There are two ways. One, by creating a Torah environment, religious neighborhoods, communities, villages, towns, and cities. This method has proven very successful in Israel and in the diaspora. A second way, and these are not mutually exclusive, to pit oneself against the world. The Torah is truth. A bit of truth can push aside a great deal of falsehood. The world is a challenge. The preparation for it must be an intense education, wide-ranging knowledge of Torah. The goal, to maintain the Torah without compromises within the world. And with such a pride that others will be thereby influenced. This is a system of thought known as Torah im Derech Eretz, Torah combined with interaction with society. This way does not shirk temptation, it challenges it. The danger, though, is clear. So, if you have this, you know, always the question is, what's wrong with Beethoven? What's wrong with art? What's wrong with music? What's wrong with sports? There's nothing wrong with it per se. The question is, are you in the right position to be able to handle it and still maintain your focus, your equilibrium in Torah? If you can. So you can't just go ahead and say, music is fine, art is fine. You can't just unleash that to every single Jew and say, therefore, go out and become a musician. The person has to be grounded. So what he says at the end is, every person must devote himself to Torah. He's talking to the young person for many years. Afterwards, continue with regular set periods of Torah study. Each one in his place in life thereby sanctifies God. By keeping the Torah's regulations, maintaining integrity in business, setting a personal example.
You know,
but you have to be grounded. You've got to be grounded first.
There is a place that says that you're supposed to take from the world.
If you can. In other words, people make a philosophy. People say that since it's okay by the Torah to embrace culture, therefore what? So therefore just go do it?
No.
It's like everything. You have to learn how to use it properly. It's okay to drive, even though it's dangerous. It's okay to drive if you're a good driver. You can't take a car and therefore put it in the hand of your 15-year-old who doesn't have a license and say, but it's okay to drive. He does it. She does it. They're ready. You're not. Same thing with the world. There's a place, but for whom? And who is equipped to be able to use it and not have it influence them to the point where it takes them away from Judaism, or they lose their equilibrium. They can't control the body or the emotions or the intellect. So it's like a tool. You have to be able to know how to use it.
But it's there for a reason.
Yeah, you can admire
it. It's there for a reason because we are supposed to be developed to be able to use it.
Yeah.
Right, because it is.
But what if we're not developed? We should use it anyway. You're 100% right, but that doesn't mean use it indiscriminately. What's more important is the person, not what he does. A Jew should be able to be like an Abraham and a Yitzchak, especially a Yaakov. Of all the three patriarchs, Yaakov is the most involved in the world. He came to Shechem and he said, let's see what we need here. We need to build up the economy. He became the mayor. You know? So I'm saying that as a matter. A Jew is supposed to be a Yosef. A Jew is supposed to be a Moshe and a David and a Shlomo. But if you're not on their level, it's going to be suicide if you try to do the things that they did. So yes, in theory, there's a place. A Jew is supposed to bring the world to tikkun. A Jew is supposed to sanctify God. That's what we have the potential for. But if we don't do it in the right way, it's going to crush us. It's that simple.
Thank you.
Yisr kolach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.